So we're holding on page 72 in Chagiga, about three lines from the bottom, middle of Osir Dalad. We're almost through the whole story of the Abash and Ishtar Silver Paradis. We spent the largest amount of time on Acher and what happened to him. So now, five lines from the bottom, actually. So now we're up to, from the bottom. So now we're up to the last member of the quartet. We had Ben Azai passed away. Ben Zoma went insane. Reb Akiva, became an apikoros, Kitzitz Ben Atiyas. And now we're up to the fourth one, Reb Akiva. So Reb Akiva, Olav Shalom, Yorav Shalom, Reb Akiva went up there in peace and came down in peace. He came out intact and even greater from the experience. But Olav Akosav Omer, Moshcheni Acharecha Narutza, the Pasuk describes his experience with the words, we say to the Jewish people, draw me, we will run after you. In other words, Reb Akiva is not going to go any further than Hashem draws him. He's not going to try, unlike Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, and Acher, who went too far and therefore it affected them badly. Rabbi Akiva was careful to stay within the bounds that he's supposed to. Marshall also adds that the continuation of that pasuk is after Mashcheni Acharecha Narutza. The next words in the pasuk are Hevi Ani Hamelach Chadorov. The king has brought me to his inner chambers, representing then Rabbi Akiva was brought into the inner chambers, into the Echolos, which was the whole Nifnas of the Paradis. But when he reached the point where he knew that human seichel can't go beyond that, then he doesn't try to go any further than that. So he's nimshach. Nimshach also means he holds himself back. So he holds himself back to not go any further than he's supposed to. And we talked about the other day also what's brought in Chassidus, that the vort of Nichnas v'shalom v'yotz v'shalom is that to begin with, he went into this experience not so much in order to have greater greatness for himself, which as dacristic as it is a bit of a selfish thing to do it for himself, but rather he's doing it for the sake of being able to come closer to the Eivishter and being able to bring more shalom into the world. And therefore, so that's Nichnas v'shalom. He went in with that attitude and therefore yotz v'shalom, as opposed to the other three, in other words, who were more into it, at least on a dacristic level, more that they themselves should reach higher levels without concerning themselves as much with the fact that there has to be a shoyv, that it has to result in practical and in practical improvements as far as Yuli of course in the world. So the Gemara says, after Rabbi Akiva bikshu Malachi Asharis l'doichvei, actually the Malachi Asharis wanted to push Rabbi Akiva away as well. They wanted to harm him as well. But Hashem says to them, Bonai, my children, leave this elder alone. He's worthy of using my covet, meaning, in other words, again, that he knows how to do it properly. So Rashi had mentioned at the beginning of the Sugya that they use Shemus Hakdoshim, they use names of Hashem for this Aliyah, for this Nichnas of the Paradis. So the Malachim are thinking to themselves that Rabbi Akiva doesn't deserve to be using these high level Shemus for this purpose either. But Hashem is telling them, no, he's worthy of using my covet, meaning the covet of Hashem that's represented by his names. He knows how to use it properly, so leave him alone. So the Gemara says, my Dorash, what did Rabbi Akiva Darshin to himself to realize that there's a point beyond which he shouldn't be looking, to know, so to speak, where the Shechina is? The Pasuk says, literal meaning of the Pasuk is Hashem came from the myriads, from the tens of thousands of holy Malachim. But the word Asa is written unusually. First of all, the word Asa itself is Aramaic. The Hebrew equivalent would be Uva. This is a Pasuk in Chumash. You would expect it to be written in Lashon Kodesh, so it should be Uva Meriv Kodesh. And the word Asa itself is spelt unusually as well. It's spelt with a hey at the end. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva understood it to mean Oishuber Revava Shaloi, means Hashem is like a mark, like a distinguishing sign among his tens of thousands. So meaning, in other words, that Rabbi Akiva realized that, so Marshall explains, with this and each of the other ones, what it means is, Hashem, there's nothing else that you can compare to Hashem. Now, in particular, the Gemara's question is, what made him avoid Acher's mistake? Acher, we said, saw Matat sitting, and he thought that Matat is another god. Rabbi Akiva also saw Matat sitting. How did he not make the same mistake? The answer is, the first answer and the other three answers are all going to be that he saw, that he realized Hashem is not going to be anything like any, Hashem, there's no comparison to Hashem among all the Tzivos Shemayim. So therefore, when he saw, yes, he saw Matat, but he saw other Malachim as well, and he was able to realize and to perceive that Matat is a very high-level Malach, but a Malach all the same. So he realized he can't possibly be Hashem or any or anything like that, because there's another one like him. And again, Hashem is unique and there's nothing like him. So that way he avoided this mistake. So that's the awesome narrative of his Kurdish. Rabbi Bohu says this different pasuk expresses this idea. The pasuk describes Hashem, dogo mero, so to speak, describes Hashem, dogo merovava. Literally, dogo means he's like carrying a banner, Moshe Degel, merovava among the 10,000, dugma hu merovava shaloi. Again, it means that Hashem is something unique. A dugma is like a sample, like something that you look at it and it's marked out from everything else. It's distinguished from everything else. So Hashem is distinguished among all the tens of thousands. Again, the same idea, in other words, that Rabbi Akiva realized Hashem has that Matat can't possibly be Hashem. Marsha also adds, now really, I mean, what are you going to say? We're darshaning the word dogol as if it was dugma with a mem. Where do you find that a lamed interchangers with a mem? He says, no, what it means is, when you have, for example, the flag carrier among the army, you can distinguish him among all the other soldiers because he's the one carrying the flag. The same way Hashem, so to speak, is distinguishable from all the other hosts in Shemayim. So the same way Hashem is distinguished, that Hashem is Echad, that there's no other like him. Resh Lakish says another pasuk that Rabbi Akiva used to realize to hold himself back. The pasuk says Hashem Tzvaka is Shmoi. Hashem of hosts is his name, meaning Oisu Odin Hu B'Tzava Shaloi, meaning that Hashem rules over all the hosts. So again, in other words, he realizes so it can't be that Matat or any other being is Hashem, because they don't rule over everything else. And he realized Hashem is the one who rules over, since Hashem is the exclusive one who rules over everything. Tzvakos in the plural, in fact. There's two hosts, Shamayla and Shamata. So Hashem Tzvakos Shmoi. So we're saying that Hashem is the ruler over both kinds of hosts. Another way that he learned it is you have the story of the vision, the nevuah that Eliyahu saw on Har Choriv. Where he sees, first he sees there's a huge storm wind. Loi baruach Hashem. Hashem is not coming in the storm wind. Va'acha ruach rash. And after that was an earthquake. Loi barash Hashem. Hashem wasn't coming in the earthquake. Va'acha rash esh. Loi ba'esh Hashem. Then there was a fire, and Hashem was still not coming in the fire. Va'acha esh killed mamash. And then after the fire, there was a still small voice, and that was the voice of Hashem speaking to him. And the pasuk says, "Vihine Hashem over," and behold, Hashem is passing. Actually, Maharsha points out the words "Vihine Hashem over" are earlier in the pasuk, before the wind and the storm and all of that. The point is, in other words, though, that he realized that Hashem is not going to be among the malachim of the winds or the storms or the earthquakes and everything. So there's gonna, when you hear a curled mamadaka, then you know, so to speak, that Hashem's Shekhinah is passing, and so Rabbi Akiva realized at that point he needs to stay away when he hears that curled mamadaka. There's also an interesting explanation that the reason why the Gemara is bringing four psukim, so first of all, Ben Yehoyada says the four psukim represent the four olamos abiyah. So in every one of them, there is a way that we can distinguish that here's where I can't go beyond, and here's where not. He says that really, I mean, when you get down to it, we talked about at the beginning that when it says Nichnas to the Paradis, doesn't mean they didn't go all the way up to Atzilus or something. They went up to Olam Yitzira, but within each world itself, you have examples of all four worlds. So therefore, within Yitzira itself, he knew how to be careful within the Atzilus within Yitzira and the Bria within Yitzira and so forth. Anyway, there's another interesting point about it, which is, given that we can't describe Hashem, but we can get some comprehension of what Hashem is in various ways, and each of them is represented by one of these psukim. We can see the things that Hashem does in the world, both the things that we call the laws of nature and the things that we recognize as nisim. We can see Hashem's hand in those. That's oishu b'ravava shaloi. Hashem makes oisus. Hashem makes signs in the world by which we can recognize that Hashem is acting here. Dogum b'ravava dugmuhu b'ravava shaloi. Means that a person is, in a certain way, a semblance of Hashem. A person is a tzelem elokim. And we have the famous pasuk, "Besori echzer elokai," which you have in thousands of places, tens of thousands of places in Chassidus, that based on how we see how things work within the human body and the human mind and the human emotions and so forth, we can get some idea of how Hashem does things. So that's the second explanation, is that the one way that we know anything about Hashem is by drawing an analogy from the human body. The third one, Hashem Tzvakas Shmoi, that Hashem is an Odin, but Tzav HaShaloi is another way that we know that Hashem is here, is that Hashem rules over everything. Hashem is the king of the whole world, Melech HaKal HaAretz. And the fourth one, the Loi Baruach, Loi Barash, etc., is the Rambam makes a big thing out of it in Murei Nevuchim in particular. He says, you know, a lot of the descriptive terms that we apply to Hashem, what does it really mean? When we say, for example, that Hashem is wise and strong and so forth, the wisdom of Hashem and the strength of Hashem and all the other middos that we can describe of Hashem, they're nothing like ours. They're infinitely greater. So what does it mean? What does it mean when we talk about, for example, Hashem's wisdom? So the Rambam says what it means is these are kind of negative things. It's atzad ha-shlila. Meaning when we say, for example, that Hashem is wise, what we really mean is we can't say a wisdom that we can recognize. Like we have in Pasach Eliyahu, you have the expression, chakim v'lo b'chochma yadiyah. It's not a knowable wisdom. What it means is, well, what's the opposite of being wise is being foolish. What we can say definitively is Hashem is not that. Similarly, what's the opposite of strong, weak? We can say definitively Hashem is not that, and so forth. There's a lot of things. We can say Hashem is not this, but we can't say what he is. So therefore, that's the fourth pasuk that we're bringing over here, where Eliyahu is saying Hashem is not in the storm, Hashem is not in the earthquake, and so on and so forth. What Hashem is beyond us to be able to know, but at least the point is, these are all ways in which Rabbi Akiva could get some inkling infinitely greater than ours, obviously, but still, relative to actual Atzmus and Mahus, some inkling of what Hashem is to the extent that he could avoid Acher's mistake, and that he was Nichnas B'Shalom, V'Yotze B'Shalom. Okay, so having talked a lot about Malachim, and now we mentioned before that Acher heard from behind the paragoid, from behind the curtain that, so to speak, separates Elikus from us. In the terms of Kabbalah, we call that curtain the Prosa. It's also Prosa means a curtain, like the Poroches that you had between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and you have that between Atzilus and the lower worlds. So we had over there that Acher heard from behind that the expression Shuvu Bonim Shevavim Chutz Ma'Acher. So now the Gemara brings something where we're also going to mention about hearing from behind the paragraph. There are six things that we can say about Shadim. Shadim are, as we're going to see in this Gemara, they're a kind of malach, but they also have certain characteristics of people. There's three ways in which they're like malachim, and three ways in which they're like people. Number one, they have wings, like the malachim are described as having wings, meaning that they can easily fly from one point to the other. They're able to travel from one end of the world to the other like the malach hasharis. Now, Marsha says, isn't that the same thing? If they have wings and they can fly around, then yeah, they can fly everywhere in the world. Marsha says, no, the second thing means human beings can't live everywhere in the world. There are certain places near the poles, for example, where it's really, people don't live there. It's too cold or it's too whatever, different places. But Shadim are able to live in such places, just like Malachim would be able to. That's the toss in Misofa or the Matsofa, literally from one end of the world to the other. There's no place that's inhospitable to them. And the third one, the Yodin Asid Lias to Malach HaSharis. The third thing is they know the future, just like the Malachim. So when I say Yodin Sakhadat, what do you mean they know? Even the Malachim don't know. Even the Malachim don't know on their own. They only know what they hear from Hashem. It means that they're able to hear from behind that curtain like the Malachim. So just like the Malachim are able to hear, so to speak, the voice coming from behind the curtain and saying what's going to happen, then the same way the Shadim have that capability, they're able to hear that as well. Tosfos actually points out, now there are other things as well. There are Shadim also go to sleep. Shadim also go to the bathroom, just like people. So there are more things. In fact, the Gemara is going to point out now that people themselves are like animals in some of these things. Animals sleep and so do people. And it doesn't mention sleeping actually, but whatever. Animals go to the bathroom and so do people. So Tosfos says, fine, it's all included in these three things that we said. Well, actually, we haven't gotten to that. Let's do the Gimel B'nei Adam first. Gimel K'bnei Adam, Ochlin V'Shoisin K'bnei Adam, Shadim eat and drink like people, as we have, for example, the story of Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim in Gittin, where he has a whole pit full of water, and Benayahu replaces it with wine, etc. Uporim merovim k'mnei adam, they have children just like people do. Umesim k'mnei adam, and they die like people. So now, here's where Tosfos points out, the Gemara could have also added, they go to sleep like people, as Ashmedai does in that story. They go to the bathroom like people. But fine, Tosfos says it's kind of included in what we're saying. We're mentioning certain things in which are like people. Yeah, and there's other things as well that we don't have to specify, but they're included in that. Anyway, the point is that really the Gemara just wants to find three and three, so we don't have to go through an exhaustive list. Marsha makes a different point of it. That when we say that shadim eat and drink like people, we don't just mean people eat and shadim eat. We mean animals eat too. What it means is shadim eat the same kind of food that people do. They don't eat hay like animals do. Instead, they eat human food. And the same thing, the potin v'robin from the adam doesn't just mean they have children. Animals have children too. It means that they mate in the same way as people do, a man and woman face to face, rather than most animals do front to back. And the Mason Kimine Adam, what does that mean? Maharsha says it means that the neshama of a shed might be able to have a place in Gan Eden, like a person who kept mitzvahs in this world. We find in that story with Ashmedai, where every day he's going up to the Yeshiva Shalmaila and learning Torah over there and then coming back down to earth. So in other words, as opposed to a behemoth, once it's gone, then it's gone. So that would answer Tosfos' question. Yes, there are, of course, other things in which shadim are like people, and which people themselves in turn are like animals, but the Gemara wants to show where these things in which there are things that both people and animals have in common, but they do them differently as far as eating and drinking and as far as mating and so forth. And in those ways, shadim are like people rather than like animals. That's the point. So the Gemara continues, the Shisha Dvarim Nemru B'nei Adam. There are also six characteristics that we can say about people. People are halfway also, in a way, between Malachim and animals. Shlosha K'malach HaSharas V'Gimel K'Behema. There are three ways in which people are like Malachim and three ways in which they're like animals. Gimel K'malach HaSharas, Yesh Ben Das K'malach HaSharas. People have Das, people have understanding, which animals don't. So in that way, we're like Malachim. We walk upright like Malach Asharis, unlike animals that walk on all fours. There's a piskum and hayom yom, where one of the rabbeim said, it's a chesed of the Eveshter that he did that way a person is able to look up at Shemayim and then look up and then that way be able to focus his thoughts on Hashem, as opposed to a behemoth who's always looking downward at the ground. Even the goyim look up, so they have a more, they don't have the proper conception of Hashem, they'll have that loss of love, but nevertheless, again, there's also the idea that Hashem had to make, so to speak, had to make Jews and goyim identical in Gashmius in order to preserve the Chiruch Hafshis. There's a mimer someplace that says that by rights, it should have been that goyim walk on all fours like behemah, but it would have destroyed the Chiruch Hafshis because everybody would see that the Jewish people are special, and the whole point was there needs to be the possibility of people misunderstanding that. Anyway, so that's one. So that's the second one. Almost Saffron, Balashan Kodesh, Malach HaSharis. And the third one is that people speak Balashan Kodesh just as the Malachim do. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean not all people speak Balashan Kodesh. What we mean is, the point is, Malach HaSharis don't, in particular, Malach HaSharis only speak Balashan Kodesh. They don't speak Aramaic. There's various places in the Gemara where, in fact, it mentions that the Malach HaSharis don't pay attention to Aramaic. There's explanations. Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss. Doesn't mean they don't know Aramaic, or doesn't mean that they consider it a corrupted language, since, after all, it's related to Balashan Kodesh, but different. So maybe like they consider it like a corrupted version, like a slang version almost of Balashan Kodesh rather than a proper language. In any case, the point is they speak Lashon Kodesh. So people, those people who know Lashon Kodesh are like them in that regard. But the main point is, Maharsha says, in other words, animals can't speak at all any language, whereas Malach HaSharis and people have a language. So in those three ways, we're like Malach HaSharis. Shloshe K'behema. On the other hand, there are three ways in which people are like animals. Ochen B'shoisin U'parim B'robin. We eat and drink in a way like animals, not exactly because we eat different food, but still, they have to eat and so do we. Or parin v'rovin, and we have children, just like we mate, and we have children, just like the animals do. Or mitzian re'i k'behema, and we go to the bathroom like animals do. Whereas malachim don't need any of those things. In a way, bedakus, we say that there is. For example, it talks about, for example, those places where it's brought that all the gashmiistic pleasures of this world, all the klippas of this world, come from like the waste products of the malachim. So, like, so to speak, they do go to the bathroom in a sense, and all of that, from that comes all the energy that powers all the klippas in our world. But still, at least it's not going to the bathroom in anything that we, in any way that we would recognize as such. Okay. Fine. So now we're done with the part about, now we're done with the explaining the whole thing of Maisa Merkava and all the outgrowths of that. So now, continuing, Piska, so quoting from the Mishnah, call him Stakel, the Dalad Devonim Fuller. The Mishnah had said that there were four things that if a person contemplates it, it would have been better off if he hadn't been born. We had the Girs over there, Ros Sui Shalobo Olam, which actually explains, means it would have been more of a Rachmanis on him if he had never been born. And then there's a different Girs that Amam has a Girs, Ra'ui, which is that it would have been, he would have been worthy, he would have been better off. Either way, it means basically the same thing, he would have been better off not being born. The four things the Mishnah had said is a person shouldn't start thinking, Mala Maila, Mala Mata, Mala Funim, Mala Ocher, what is above a certain point beyond which a person is not supposed to think about. We said, for example, the Rakia over the heads of the Chayes HaKodesh, over which you have the Kisei HaKavod of Hashem, and Mala Mata, what's underneath the earth, and Mala Funim, Mala Ocher, what's before and what's after, which Rashi says refers to spatially, what's behind, what's outside of the vault of the sky to the east and to the west. And Tosfos says maybe it means that, maybe it might also mean what existed before the world and what will exist after the world ceases to exist, which is what the Gemara is going to focus on over here. So the Gemara asks, so Piska called a stack of the Dalad Varim. So Bishlema Malamailo Malamata, I can understand why a person shouldn't be thinking too much into what's above and what's below. Because if he starts thinking above the Chayes HaKodesh, he's going to come to the point where you have the Kisei HaKavod, and you have Yechezkel's vision of the Odom Shal HaKisei, so to speak, the human figure that sits on the throne, and he's going to start thinking, he's going to start having wrong conceptions of Hashem, and think that Hashem has a body, and so on and so forth. And Malamata, Rashi says, since the Gemara had said earlier in the Sugya, that we said the world stands on pillars, and the pillars stand on water, and the water stands on mountains, etc., and the whole thing is standing on the arm of Hashem. So when a person starts going down too far, he's going to start thinking, what arm of Hashem? He's going to start thinking Hashem has an actual arm, and again, he's going to get into problems of apikorsis. So we understand why a person shouldn't be delving into malamaila malamat. And also to ask what's going to be after the world ceases to exist. L'chayeh, then fine. You know, the person can't possibly understand that. And again, he's going to start thinking, he might think, for example, that when the world ceases to exist, then Hashem also, chas v'shalom, or who knows what. So he might come to wrong ideas. Ela malafonim. But who cares if he starts thinking about what existed before the world? Ma dehava hava. What's done is done. It's already ancient history. So who cares if he starts delving into it? What harm is there? Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, Dami Tavayu, Lama Dover Dremes, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar give an analogy to explain it. It's like the Melech Sha'amal Avod, if a king tells his servants, L'chuv Nuli Paltun Dolem Al Ashba, go build me a big palace on the garbage heap. So right now there's a garbage heap there. I want you to instead build a palace over there. Ho'chu Vonuloi, well, they went and built the palace over there. It would be disrespectful to the king. The king doesn't want that anybody should mention that there was a garbage heap over there. So the same way, so to speak, Hashem created the world where you could say, in a certain, now the question is, Marshall says, what garbage heap over there? The fact is, the world was created, yesh me'ayin, there's no garbage. So unlike in the Marshall, where there was something there, there was a garbage heap, here there's nothing there beforehand. So Marshall says, the vote is like this. First of all, you have the Ramban and other Rishonim talk about the idea, we touched on this the other day, that when Hashem created the world, first he created yesh me'ayin, in a raw material, which they call them in philosophy terms, chomer hiyulim. Then Hashem took that and shaped it and made it into all the various things we have in the world. So a person, you can't really picture, you can't get any real conception of what that chomer hiyuli is. And if you start thinking too much into it, you're going to start thinking that maybe it always existed. And that would be an apikorsish idea, which famously a lot of Greek philosophers, Aristotle and others, held that way, that the world has always existed, which is flat out against our emunah. So that's the mashal over here, that you're going to start thinking of the garbage of the chomer hiyuli that was there before. And you're going to come to wrong conceptions. You need to be aware that there was yesh me'ayin, there was nothing that we could have any conception of beforehand, and therefore don't keep thinking too deeply into it. Another point on it, Ben Yehoyada makes a point, it's brought in other places as well, that the ashpa of this mashal over here also represents olam ha'tohu. So we know that there was the Eibishter created an Olam HaTohu, and then there was Shvira Sakelim, and then the Eibishter rebuilt Olam HaTikun. Olam HaTohu was like garbage compared to Olam HaTikun. It's a shattered shell of itself. So therefore, so don't start thinking too deeply into exactly what Olam HaTohu was, because that's disrespectful to Hashem, as if it could lead a person to think, for example, that Hashem makes mistakes and false starts, or from another plan, it could come to all kinds of misconceptions about what our place is, where we belong in Olam HaTikun, and we don't have to, and as far as we're concerned, what Olam HaTohu, what we need to know about it, is that there are sparks of kedusha in it in our world that we need to work on being mevarer. Okay, Piska, another quotation from the Mishnah. We said kol shlech chosar kovod koneh v'chola. Anybody who doesn't concern himself with the honor of Hashem, then also roy rosri lo shle b'la'olam, also he would have been better off not being born. So maihi, what do we mean by a person who doesn't show respect for Hashem? So a few explanations. Rab Abba Amazam is stuck of a keshis. Rab Abba says it means somebody who gazes at the rainbow. Now, you're allowed to look at it briefly to make the bracha, but you shouldn't be gazing at it. Dichtiv, because we find in Yitzchak's description of Maisim Merkava, he says, Kimare a keshis ashiyeh ba'onan, remember, like the appearance of the rainbow that's in the clouds on a rainy day. That was, he compares the glory of the Shekhinah that he saw over there to that. So therefore, in other words, the Shekhinah appears in the rainbow, and therefore a person shouldn't be staring at it, because then it's like he's not showing proper respect for Hashem. A person shouldn't be looking at where the Shekhinah is. That's what we said. Rabbi Akiva avoided that, so obviously we're talking a much lower level of Gilui Shekhinah, but nevertheless it shows respect for Hashem to not stare at it. So that's one explanation. Rabbi Yosef gives a different explanation when the Mishnah says somebody who doesn't show respect for Hashem is Zeha Oivra Avera Baseser, when a person does an Avera in secret. Because then he shows that as the Gemara mentions a similar concept in Baba Kama, for example. We know that a Ganav has to pay kefil, sometimes he has to pay above a Hamisha when an animal was involved. On the other hand, a Gazlan only ever pays Keren, he only ever pays the actual amount. The difference is that the Ganav acts in secret. He goes and steals in secret. So he's acting that he's afraid of people, but he's not afraid of Hashem. As opposed to the Gazlan steals openly in public, and therefore he shows he's not afraid of either one. So in a way, the Ganav is showing a greater chutzpah against Hashem, as if like people's opinion is more important than Hashem's. So in a similar vein, then, when a person does an Aveda in secret, then he's showing that he has no respect for Hashem, because then he shows that he doesn't believe that Hashem is watching him. Mars. In fact, we say elsewhere, a person does an Aveda in secret, Hashem will cause it to be revealed in public, because, like this, he showed disrespect for Hashem, and therefore Hashem causes it to become known. So, getting back to the matter of the rainbow a minute, this whole piece over here is in parenthesis, by the way. It's not printed in the standard Gemara. However, you can see it's here in Ein Yaakov, obviously. And in fact, Agoris HaBach on the side of the Gemara also adds it in. So, I guess some manuscripts had it, some didn't. Anyway, Rava Amakolam is stack of a keshes tzorach sheyipol aponu. Anybody who sees the rainbow should fall on his face in honor of Hashem. Dichtiv, as you see in that pasuk in Yechezkel. He says, Kemare akeshes ashayir ba'onan b'yem ha-goshem, like the appearance of the rainbow that appears in the clouds on a rainy day, kein mare anoga saviv, that was what the glow around the vision of Hashem that he saw was, hu mare d'mus k'vod Hashem, I saw the vision of the semblance of the glory of Hashem. Obviously, he didn't see Hashem himself, only like a semblance. And he continues, v'ere v'epel aponai, I saw it and I fell on my face in respect for Hashem, v'eshma k'l medaber, and then I heard a voice speaking, and that was Hashem giving him his nevuah. The point being, in other words, just like Yechezkel saw something which he describes as a rainbow, and he fell on his face to bow and prostrate himself before Hashem, so Rava is saying we should do the same thing. However, the Gemara says, Laiti, Allah b'ma Rava. They criticize, literally, Laiti means they cursed, at that, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael. The problem with that is, Rashi, by the way, says, Lo yigor sin in law, we don't have those words. Rava said something, they're not going to be Laiti Allah, they're not going to curse at it, but they're going to say it's inappropriate to do, it's no good, Meshim de Mexican Minus. It's going to look like Minus, it's going to look like you're bowing to the actual rainbow. Rather, you should say the bracha that Hashem remembers the bris, because the point of a rainbow is that Hashem says after the marbel, I'm never going to bring a marbel again, and the rainbow is a sign of that promise. So, haroyas akeshes tzorach levarech. So, in fact, when a person sees the rainbow, he's supposed to make a bracha. Mai mevarech baruch zecher abris. Rabbi Shmuel, Bnei Shmuel, Rabbi Yechon, and Bnei Shmuel, Baruch Zorichan Abris, V'neman Mevusay, V'kayim Ma'amore. The full Nusach is, which is how we say it, that Hashem remembers the covenant, and he's faithful to his covenant, and he keeps his word. So all of those, in other words, represent that Hashem promised over and over that he's not going to bring a marble again. And every time we see a rainbow, it shows, as Rashi mentions on the Psukim over there, it shows that people are acting in a way that deserves to cause a marble, but Hashem remembers the bris and is faithful to it and keeps his word and doesn't bring a marble. So that's the bracha that we say. Going back now, we said that a person does an aveira in secret, so Rava points out something in this connection. Dorash Rava, my dichtiv, ginas eges yaranti. Hashem says, personified, that so to speak, that I went down to the garden of nuts, liras ve'ibe hanochal, to see the new young plants that are growing in the valley. So we're saying that there's something about the Jewish people, and particularly about the Tamar Chachamim, that could be compared to nuts. So, Loma Nimshul Divre Torah La'Eggers, why are words of Torah compared to a nut? Loy Malach, Ma Eggers Afrisham Luchlach, the Titur Ritzoya. Just like a nut, even though it's filthy with mud and dirt and everything, Ein Masha B'Seichen Nimas, what's in the nut meat inside is not affected because it's completely protected by the nutshell. Af Tamad Chocham, Afrisha Sorach, the same way Tamad Chocham, even though he went bad and did Averis, Ein Torosin Nim Esses, his Torah is still not rejected. And this goes back on the whole story of Acher as well, that again, we said Rabbi Meir learned his Torah and avoided his bad ways, like when a person eats a date and throws out the pit, or the other way around, when he eats a pomegranate and peels off the outside skin and then eats the inside. So you also have another way of looking at it is that Acher is like a nut rolling around in the mud over there, and Rav Meir is able to take and extract the nut meat from it. So now, getting back to this matter of Over Aveda Baseser, Amr of Yitzchak, Kala Over Aveda Baseser, a person does an Aveda in secret, Kala Dolchik Rag, and he said that's disrespectful to Hashem, because he's acting as though Hashem doesn't see him. Kala Dolchik Rag Le Ashchina. It's as if he's pushing away the feet of the Shechina. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Hashem says the heavens are my throne and the earth is my footstool. So to speak, Hashem's feet are resting on the earth. And when a person does an aveda in secret and acts as though Hashem is not watching him, so therefore it's like he's pushing away, as he's saying, Hashem's feet, Hashem's connection with the world doesn't belong here. So again, Rabbi Yosef had said that's what the Mishnah had meant when it said that a person acts in a disrespectful way towards Hashem. But the Gemara asks, Eini, is that so? That the worst thing is to do an aveda in secret. By the way, Eitz Yosef points out as far as the comparison with the nut, that the vort is that even if it happens that a Tamar Chacham does an aveda, it doesn't stick to him completely. So therefore, it's like dirt that gets on the outside of a nut where you can easily wash it off. So the hamor shabatera machzir the mutug. So kol ayr avir v'seisikir the dirt of raglashin. Yeah. So the Gemara says, "Any is that so? Vatanya or omer of loy hazokin omer im roya adam shiyitzir misgaber olav. If a person sees that his yetzahara is getting the better of him b'chol yom and every day, and he can't hold back anymore, yeluch l'makom shein makirin. So he should go to a place where they don't recognize him. V'yilbash shchodim. He should wear black clothes. V'yiskasa shchodim and cover himself and wrap himself in black clothes, which in those times was a symbol of mourning. People usually, when things were good, they would wear white or colorful clothing, and he was wearing all black, which is a sign of avelos. The yasa mashalib chafetz and do what his heart desires, val yichal Hashem shemayim b'fahesya, and not make a chilul Hashem in public. So on the face of it, now there are two. Now, so Rashi explains that first of all, when he goes to a place where nobody knows him, he's not going to be so proud of himself. Rabbeinu Hanano brings a cute vort on this from someplace else in the Gemara. A dog, when it's in a place where in an unfamiliar place, he doesn't bark for 7 years. It's like it takes time for a person is in an unfamiliar environment, it takes some time to feel the same break kite that he did before. So that's first of all. Then the fact that he's wearing black clothes, so because he's wearing black clothes, it actually explains, first of all, nobody pays attention to him because nobody knows who he is, and second of all, the fact that he's wearing such degraded clothing, so in other words, it sounds like we're saying, so then at that point, when he does the Avera, it's the less worse option because at least he's not making a Chilul Shamayim b'fahesya. Now, Tosfos points out, there is a different, now the implication of the way Rashi is explaining it and Tosfos says similarly, is that at that point, if he does the Avera, it's not as bad. So obviously he shouldn't be doing the Avera, but it's not as bad as if he did it back home, where then it would cause a Chilul Hashem as well. On the other hand, Tosfos brings Rabbi Nechananel says, of course, Rabbi Eloy doesn't mean you should do the Avera. It means that these tactics are methods to break his Yetzirah. When he goes to a different place where nobody knows him, and he's wearing black degraded clothing, then that itself is going to break his Avera. So now, when it says V'yasa Mashal Libet Chofetz, Rabbi Nechananel learns, it doesn't mean that at that point let him do the Aveda. It means now, at this point, he's more able to follow his inclinations and have less of a concern that those are going to include the Aveda where the Yetzirah was getting the better of him. But anyway, Tosfos says, our Gemara over here seems to imply, like the first explanation, that we do actually mean, if he does the Aveda, it's a lesser infraction than if he had done it back home, where then it's a Chilul Shamayim, then it's a Chilul Hashem as well. Anyway, the point is that on the face of it, we're saying that under those circumstances, doing an Aveda in secret is good. And then, so what are we saying? We're saying that Yasa Mashal Libet Chofetz, rather than making a Chilul Shamayim for Hesia, but we just said before that to do an Aveira and act as though Hashem is not watching is a terrible thing. And the answer is that's the distinction. Like Kasha, Hodem Motzi Kayif LeYitzre, Hodem Motzi Kayif LeYitzre. It depends whether he's able to control his Yetzirah or not. If he really feels that his Yetzirah is uncontrollable, then this option of going to another place and wearing the black clothes, etc., is the least worst option. As opposed to, so then, in other words, yes, it's not a good thing to be doing an Aveira Baseser and act as though Hashem is not seeing, but here he's doing it because he feels that his Yetzirah is completely uncontrollable and he's doing it to avoid, a Chilul Hashem, then it's the less worse option. And again, according to Rabbi Nechananel, anyway, the whole question, in a way, doesn't even begin because he's not saying do the Aveira, he's saying that these are methods by which a person can break his Yetzirah. So the Gemara continues in that vein. Tanya of Yehuda Amir Meshum Rav Elazar, Noyach Lo La'Adam Sheyaver Aveda Baseser. In a way, it's better for a person to do an Aveda in secret, V'lo Yichal Hashem Shemayim B'Fahesia, rather than making a Chilul Hashem in public. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Yechezkel warns the Jewish people, V'atem Beis Yisrael, Klayam Hashem, Ish Gilula V'chu Avoidu. He says, each of you go worship your idols, V'achar, and after that, you're going to see what happens in Enchem Shemim Eli, if you don't listen to me. So Rashi on the Pasuk, another Mephoshim explained, in the simple sense, Yechezkel was telling them, like, if sometimes you tell a person, you know, fine, go ahead, do whatever you want, you're going to see there's going to be consequences. But here, on the surface, at least, Yechezkel was telling them, fine, go worship your Avodah Zarah. But he continues, "Vest shem kodshu lo yisachalalu, but don't make a chilul Hashem of my holy name." And Omer Rabbi Loi, really odd, it's miskabel all the fuller. And Rabbi Loi makes his point about when a person finds that his yetzirah is overpowering him. So, in other words, from that pasuk also, Rabbi Yehuda is saying we see also that in one sense, then on one sense, the Navi is telling them, "Don't think you're going to get away with it. You think you're going to go worship your Avodah Zarah, you're going to see there's going to be consequences." But in another vein, the Navi is also telling them, "You know what? If it's gotten to the point where you really can't hold yourselves back, then better, fine, go worship them, but at least don't do it in a way that causes the Chilul Hashem." So that's what the Gemara is saying over here. It depends whether Motzi Kayif LeYitzre or not, whether he's able to hold back his Yetzirah or not. And if he's not able to, then yeah, to not make a Chilul Hashem is the better course of action, even if it means that he's doing the Aveda Baseser, because then it's true, it shows a disrespect for Hashem, but at least he's not making a Chilul Hashem for Hesia, which would be a much more serious thing. Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola, Tetzayin Elul. Rebbe was talking about that nowadays we've completed the entire Avodas of Birurim, including that we've been Mevar Esav U'edrim. This was a Sikha of Parshas Vayetze, so Esav is very much on a topic of discussion there. And after all, we see a Kavah Chomer. Yaakov Avinu in his time was already thinking that Esav is ready for Avodas of Birurim. When he has, at the beginning of Vayishlach, when he sent messengers to Esav, there's a whole mimer in Torah Ur that explains that Yaakov thought that Esav is already ready for Birur, and therefore he tells him, by Yishur v'chamur, etc., that I'm already, I have Mashiach, I have everything, I'm already, and will you join me? So Yaakov thought it was already then. And Yaakov's level, it was already, just on the level of Esav, it wasn't yet, which is why Esav reacted badly. So Alachas Kamu Bakama, we've done so much Avoda since then. So yes, Esav has been completely refined. And we see that everyone was talking, this was in Toshin Rin Beis in late 1991, that we see that nowadays in Golos Edom, even the Umas Ha'olam, who belong to Esav or Edom, are acting in a way of Malchus Shochesed. And it's spreading to other countries as they were seeing at that time that there were peace treaties and arms reduction talks and all those kinds of things going on at the time.
That's Russian.
What?
except Russia. No, Russia. No, at that time, this was actually when, at the time,
I think it was the same week or like a week before or something, that this whole Soviet Union collapsed at the end of 91. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. New simon in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the dinim of a fire breaks out on Shabbos, Chas V'Shalom. Now, the problem is, like, first of all, like this, when you have any case, nowadays in general, we live among the Goyim. If a fire breaks out, there's always the concern, and it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, that they may use it as an opportunity to loot or who knows what. So therefore, there can be issues of pikuach nefesh over there, and therefore, bederach klal, you do call the fire department and do whatever. But where it's a situation of only moment, and there's no possibility of sakonis nefashis at all, now the chachamim were concerned. On the other hand, in the panic, a person might go carry out everything, and he might carry muktzah things, and he might carry them in the street where he's not allowed to. So therefore, the chachamim put certain rules on what you allowed to or not allowed to carry out in such cases, and the bulk of the simon is going to deal with those dinim.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.